Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are working all day for a packet of pay, thanks to OldFootballShirts.com. So, a late Burnley sucker punch robbed us of our second win of the season after Jeff Hendrick's last-minute goal cancelled out Neil Morpie's opener. It was very much a case of 2 points dropped. This week, we face our longest trip of the season to Newcastle, where we enjoyed one of our rare away victories last season. But can our seagulls soar, or will the Magpies steal the points? And then on Wednesday, it's our heroes against the villains as the Carabao Cup rolls back into town. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the writer of Mein Kampfverein and Southern Fail the Musical, and obviously a writer on The Treason Show as well. It's Simon Levinson. Hello, Levo.
Good evening. Good evening.
I think you also forgot ex-BBC non-league expert.
Well, this is true.
We've also forgotten probably everything else from the week.
If we want to talk about non-league, we can do that.
Absolutely.
We can talk about how, whilst we were at the Amex on Saturday, that Worthing were busy drawing 5-all at home to Leatherhead.
Is that what they did?
Yeah.
That's a bit careless of them. Thanks for inviting us. Yeah.
Anyway,
Levo, how
one
are
up
you, mate?
Well.
It's been a while since you've been on the show.
Well. Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks for coming in at the last minute. Did you have a pleasant journey? Tell us about where you work and how you got here.
I got back all right. It was getting there this morning.
Back from where?
From Red Hill.
Yes. I thought you were in Palace Land.
No. I moved from Palace
Land. He's no longer in Snake Mountain.
All right, okay.
No, the 5:53 train this morning was a joy.
In what way?
It left at about 6:45. Well, no one had put money in the electric meter at Preston Park.
No one had wound the clock up.
That's it. Yep. And all trains were delayed, so it was a good start to the day. Only 2.5 hours to get to Red Hill. Well done, Southern.
So that was Southern Fail the Musical 2 is very much up and running.
Yeah, it's an ongoing crisis for you, isn't it?
To be fair, I mean they've got better, but let's not worry.
No,
about
I will
that
be
right
fair.
Now.
Yeah, they have got a little bit better. It's basically Network Rail, I think, set up by Chris Grayling, our old friend.
Oh, do you remember him? He used to be in government.
He did, didn't he? Yes.
Who is the Transport Secretary nowadays?
Grant Shapps.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay, well, we don't get party political on this show, but yeah, sort of fires and frying pans spring to mind here.
Yes. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, moving on.
Well, he said he was delighted to take the job.
Yeah.
Oh, aren't they all? Did Chris Grayling say that, or did he not understand the notion of delighted?
Probably not.
I mean, I know we don't do party politics here, but it is actually...
It's a football show.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think it's... But the reason we've talked about trains in the past is always because it's been so important as a major part of Albion getting the planning permission for the stadium in the first place, wasn't it?
It has. And to be fair, this season so far, the trains have run well to Falmer.
Yes, okay, well, let's
talk about this season so far then, Levo. What have you made of it and what have you made of Graham Potter so far?
I've enjoyed the style of football. It has changed slightly. The first 20 minutes of the Burnley game being the exception because that was just awful.
It was not good, was it? It was the ghost of Huttenberg was back, wasn't it?
And that was the ghost of Hippier back. I think. We were giving the ball away. It was just hugely awful. But the second half, I thought, was a great performance.
Yeah.
Just needed to put that one extra chance that's away, and the game was won because Burnley, let's be honest, they really didn't look a threat.
No, they didn't.
You know, and they got some good players there, Ashley Barnes, Chris Wood.
Yeah.
And they got
basically
some
the class of 2011 from here.
Indeed. But I just couldn't. Burnley are supposedly not a bad side, and I didn't see much to worry about with Burnley last week.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second, but I mean, generally, we've seen some big changes this season already in the fact that we've seen the likes of Florian Andoli go, we've seen the likes of Jurgen Locardi allowed to go out on loan. So, looking at what our bench on Saturday, it was a very, very young bench. Are you shocked that we've seen the likes of Jurgen and Florian go?
Well, Florian Andoni, I think, I'll be pilloried for this, but I think he had to go in the same way as Knockhart went, loose cannon at times. Knockhart's a fabulous player. We'll always love him for that goal against Palace.
Yep.
But there was always that dark side to him, and he was, you know, the. I think
the demons would actually just turn up too often, once too often. That was against Bournemouth. Yeah. Was the leg breaker?
Do you think that? I mean, in terms, and Anthony's in mind. I mean, obviously, his difficulties are well documented, so sure. we're not going to go into those now. But obviously, he was very, very close to Chris. And do you think that when with Chris going, it was a sign that it was time for him to go as well? Maybe.
Well, I think maybe Graham Potter
new challenge
wanted to. Stamp his authority, and it was going to be his team the way he wanted it.
Well, there is that, but I do also think that Graham Potter he gave him every chance. You know, Knockhart didn't go out on loan until right at the beginning of the season. Yeah, so he had a pre-season with the Albion. So Graham Potter did sort of have a look at him and work out what it was that he could get out of him. I mean, what we've got with Graham Potter is, and I'd be interested in your views on this as well, Lovo, is that the players that he's inherited, and it's not as though we've actually completely overhauled the squad. But the players he's got them playing and doing different things to what Houghton did, and possibly more the things that they're set up, and their strengths to do.
Well, certainly David Proper has been a revelation this season. He really has. And I'm no expert on tactics, but I like
any of us are.
I like what I'm seeing from David Proper, and I like what I'm seeing from the whole team because it is an attacking outlook, or far more attacking outlook. If we look at the first back to the first game of the season at Watford, bringing on strikers when we were a goal up, it wasn't going to happen in the last 2 years.
No.
But Chris Houghton, to be fair to him, did a fabulous job here. Mm. Kept us up for two seasons. We were favourites for relegation two seasons in a row. And I'm sorry to have seen him gone in some ways, but I think it was inevitable.
I think that's probably the kind of the you speak for most people. I would suggest with that, there's no way that Houghton could have thought his job was ever going to be safe. We've discussed this many times on the Raw before, but his time had come. I think, and let's face it, if he had been here still, I think we'd have actually had a lot more of the first 20 minutes against Burnley rather than the last 20 minutes against Watford. That type of football this season. Yeah.
I mean, I was talking to a Newcastle show this week, and I mean, they were really surprised about Chris not being here this season.
Well, I guess if you had seen the Albion, if like us, you had seen the Albion play, and let's face it, we had to put up with it every single week, you'd have realised that, and I think everyone realised that we stunk the place out. He did his he achieved his primary goal, which is to keep us in the Premier League, but the way that the line was carrying on. There is no way that I cannot see that he'd have actually kept us in the Premier League this season.
Well, we'll never know.
Well, absolutely. And the point is, we've got 5 points this season, with us all knowing that it could and should have been more. And at the point you were making just now, Levo, about us being a bit profligate in front of goal, it's just that extra sort of goal needed.
Okay, well,
and we'll come to that in a second.
Well, let's talk about the Burnley game in detail then. And there was some changes from the team that lost at Man City. Montoya had tonsillitis, so there was a straight return for Shane Duffy. Bissouma and Baluta were on the bench. We also had Glenn Murray and Pascal Gross came in as well. Now Pascal Gross, he's found his form again, isn't he?
Sort of. He's got a bit more freedom and space to put the crosses in. And when you get you see him in a certain position, ready to ping a cross in, you're fairly confident it's going to be a pretty good one. I think the issue with Gross and the ump that I had with him over probably most of 2019, apart from the fact he was playing under Houghton and therefore no one was in their strongest position, was he was expected to run for the ball. And that bloke can't run. Well, he can, but, only in slow motion. Whereas whilst with Potter you've got a team that has to be a lot more mobile, it does actually create a lot more space for all these players, and that is the sort of game that Gross will always thrive on.
Yeah, and there was also a home debut for Adam Webster in this game,
Bristol City fans absolutely adore him.
Yeah, but he's looking very accomplished already.
Yeah, he's looking a Premier League player, isn't he?
Yeah,
he really is. And
I mean, my take on that was that he, I don't think he pulled up any trees, but he certainly didn't look out of place. It's not as though it was a dream debut, dream home debut that, you could sort of hang on your mantelpiece. Well, but it was a solid, good start of someone you get to realise now we've got four central defenders of high enough quality that we have no problem with whichever one gets dropped.
Which Man City, we haven't got any at the moment. And in fact, Liverpool fans absolutely love Adam Webster, even though it was Laporte that actually crocked himself up with Adam. But, but he's completely derailed their season already. So,
okay.
There we go. So anyway, so Lever, you mentioned there earlier, it was a slow start to the game.
It was all a bit third division.
It was awful.
It was pretty awful. Yeah. Passes going astray, which is not what we're used to this season.
Premier League, greatest division in the world.
But TM. It was basically. Graham Potter did actually see this, and he did actually change it after 20 minutes, because up until that point, it was mostly Burnley having... No one was really getting...
Well, Burnley weren't really offering a great deal.
They had all the early opportunities. I mean, and McNeil was a massive fall on our side throughout most of that game.
Well, I just think that the Burnley, they looked dangerous. They looked the better side for 20 minutes. Yeah. But did they really create anything?
I don't recall.
It's one target in 91 minutes.
Yes. They had an early chance where McNeil was allowed to wander in easily, and his cross was deflected off Burn and went over the bar.
But the point is that their chances were actually created by us being sloppy. Yeah. Solly March was, for me, and I'm naming names here, Solly March was the main culprit in the first 20 minutes. He was giving the ball away with alarming regularity, and you could see the rest of his teammates I think they wanted to rip his head off. Mm. Now, Solly March is someone who improved during the game, but in those first 20 minutes...
Well, the mark of a good manager is to see... Oops, I've made a mistake here.
Yeah.
Let's change this around a little bit. He's done it after 20 minutes.
He went to a back four, which is when we saw the team, that's what we thought it was anyway.
I still saw it as a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2, whatever way you want to call it, because I was actually going to assume that it was Burn, Duffy and Dunk as centre-backs and Webster as the right wing-back. He kind of did more slot it into Burn being the left-back after 20 minutes. But yeah, it's kind of a clear example of how flexible we can see Graham Potter's teams can be, Levo.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. I think he's he knows what he's tactically astute.
He's imaginative.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, what you haven't got is, and I use the word carefully here, boring conservatism. You know, sort of sticking to. You know, I mean, every manager knows how to change things around, and they'll tweak the change, but he'll go from a five to a four. Back to a five. I mean, someone did point out that he actually changed his entire formation four times in one game while he was at Swansea. And if the players are actually that switched on, and they need to be, it's like being in a kind of an academy itself, a senior academy, that you have to understand every single aspect of the various formations and what each person's job is and where they've got to be at a given moment. And it kind of belies the whole notion of the football being thick, because they've really got to understand exactly what's going on around them.
We did actually say that in today's press conference ahead of the Newcastle game, that the players, they're having to be flexible. And he's really absolutely delighted with how they're taking all this information on. Because, it is... He is a bright, upcoming English manager, which you don't...
Well, the English part of it, I think, is by the by. I mean, it excites people, the fact that he's an English manager and he has tactical nous, but the fact he's English, I think, for our purposes, is by the by.
But, I mean, the fact that he has got this playbook, which none of them have never seen before, really.
Yeah.
And Shane Duffy's come out this week and said, basically, yeah, I deserve to be dropped because for the Man City game. He knew he had Webster there, and he had to up his game. And that can only be good for the team.
Well, it's kind of a step up from when Gus Poyet came in. He inherited effectively a third division squad. Well, it was a third division squad. And completely changed around the whole notion of how the club was going to play, because we were playing hitherto like a third division team and not doing anything or going anywhere with it. And we had Charlie Oakway on here about 8 years ago saying, you know, when Gus came in and told the team and the squad how they wanted to change, and they're going to, you know, play it around the back. And even the whole notion of playing it to the goalkeeper and using Ankergun as effectively a sweeper was alien to everyone.
And that, that changed, show is available in archive,
and it changed absolutely everything. Yeah, well, it probably is still. I think, you know, if we've still got the tape for it. and it changed everything. And Charlie Oakwell was going, when they first heard the ideas, he said, no, this is not how you get out of third division, Gus. Oh, yes, it is. And we destroyed that division. Now, obviously, we're not going to destroy the Premier League, but what you've got is players who've been taught and understand ways of playing football, and Potter comes in and does it completely all over again. Yeah. And these are seasoned professionals. I mean, Potter has inherited a group of highly professional players. There might be lads on the whiz later, but they are seasoned professionals. And the fact they've taken to Potter's ideas so readily, I think, is a brilliant indictment of the recruitment side, who, let's face it, were criticised last year.
Well, let's talk about the recruitment side then, Lever. I mean, we came back against we mentioned the Andoni thing earlier. Graham wants to create this pathway for the young players to come through. I mean, looking at the bench this week, I mean, like I said, it was nice to see Bissouma on there, but El Zati was there. You had
Connolly was on.
Connolly
was came
there.
On.
Sorry, Baluta. El Zati wasn't there. Sorry, it was Baluta was there, yeah. But there was no Jahanbash at all.
I do like the look of Connolly, and it's great to see a young player coming through. And what I liked about him was, he was in the penalty area for a large part of the time he was on.
Yeah.
That's where a striker's got to be, not down the left wing.
Yeah.
He's got to be, if he's going to score goals, and he nearly did score one.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got to be in that penalty, and I do like the look of him. No doubt we will see a lot more of him this season.
He's going to, although while he makes strides forward, he's going to have the odd misstep here and there, and I think people have to be forgiving of that, because he is only 19, isn't he, still?
Yeah.
Yeah. People are going to have to be forgiving of that. But he also didn't look out of place in a Premier League side. No, okay. He looked very impressive.
Another person who certainly doesn't look out of place in the Premier League side was another one of our summer recruits, and that's Neil Maupai. And he had an early chance in that first half where he played a 1-2 with Burn, but the return ball just evaded him. A little bit too much egg on the return pass. I'm not so sure.
I mean, Maupai's done well in his finishing for the most part. Excuse me. But there's still parts of his play that he does need to polish up on. The link play, the being strong, the chosen moment, not in the knockout sense, but the chosen decision in the right moment. For his approach play, there's still a bit of work to do. But he can be, not always because he's missed some sitters, but he can be quite dangerous in the box.
But that's it, but we are creating those sitters to miss, Levo.
Yeah, well, don't forget, last season, with respect to Brentford, you know, he was in a Championship side. And I think he needs, you can get away with missing chances in the Championship because you're always going to create another one.
Absolutely.
Very, very quickly. And the Premier League, a team like Brighton, are not going to create as many chances as your Liverpools, Chelsea's and Manchester City's.
I mentioned that he
missed some sitters, but we were creating these chances. But there was another one that
I'd rather they stuck away the sitters. It's great to say they were creating the chances, and that is an improvement on last season, absolutely. But you're going to have a chance and you're a Premier League player, sitters should not be missed.
But there was one other one that Solly March should have probably done better with in the first half. I mean, back in form, Grace finds March, but his tame effort easily saved by Pope in goal.
It's the decision-making at a given moment. It still has to improve. I guess you probably have that with any given player, and it's easy to be sort of wise when you're looking at the play from the West Stand up, and you can see across your entire kingdom of what's going on. You see the fans and the managers and the player and everything, and we'll get to Helicopter Dalek Man in a minute. But when you see that, you can see that Sonny March should pick out the bloke on the penalty area, on the penalty spot, but he's going for the near post. Which incidentally reminds me, in the Premier League, how many goals are we ever going to score by trying to smash the ball past the goalkeeper at the near post? There's a good chance that 99% he's going to save it. So do something right with it.
Well, he's not a bad keeper, is he, Pope?
Well, exactly. So
is he Catholic?
I've no idea.
No.
But one thing that else we've got to talk
Ask
about
Father
here
Ryan.
Is obviously this season we've seen the rise of Dan Byrne and he's this season he's
he couldn't rise anymore, he's 8 foot tall already.
I know, and that's when he's sitting down. But, you know, all the plaudits have been going to him. Everyone's been talking about Dan Byrne. But in this game, another player just reminded everybody that he's the main man.
Well, Levo's already mentioned him, hasn't he?
Yeah, Lewis Dunk.
I thought you were going to mention Davy Proper. I thought he's the man who's really leapt up.
No, this was Lewis and Lewis Dunk. That tackle on Chris Wood when he was through, that was absolutely magnificent.
Well, it was, but you could see that it was a tackle he should have made. You know, it might have looked good, but I'd have been really disappointed if he missed it.
It was a class tackle, but had he mistimed it, you know,
absolutely,
we're in trouble.
And so. And he doesn't these days tend to do that. He said, waiting for a red card against Newcastle. Those days of Lewis Dunk lashing out, and he's hardly been booked. I mean, I think it was, is it the first season under Houghton? He was just getting yellow cards for fun. And there was a time when he was risking the end of the season. I think it was the season when we missed out on promotion. He was risking the end of it. He was on 13 bookings or something and risking a three-match ban. And, you know, we're all sort of getting really, really nervous for him. Those days are gone. Mm. You know, this is a classy, stylish defender on the pitch who, I don't think he's been booked this season yet, has he? And he picks up five or six as opposed to the usual 10, 12, 13. So, you know, you clearly see there's an almighty improvement. And that's probably down to certainly the managers that he's working under, but also an improvement in his own attitude. And I think making him the club captain is, incidentally, the right choice.
Yeah.
I wonder if Gareth Southgate is keeping an eye on him, because
one would assume so.
After the Kosovo game, I didn't see, I have to say, but to concede three goals to Kosovo is possibly careless.
I did watch it, and it was very careless.
Good game. Well,
it was
done.
A great game. For a spectator, absolutely. From a neutral's point of view, it was great. From a defensive point of view, it fell out of bed.
Well, you know, Lewis is available.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to sort of know in Gareth Southgate's mind what the pecking order is, what the running order is. Mm. I mean, he gave him a chance against the USA, and I think that was purely just to have a look at him. And I don't think he had a lot to do. He certainly didn't do anything wrong, but he didn't have a lot to do.
No, but he was in the squads for the Spain and Croatia games as well, wasn't he? I mean, he didn't get on, but he was...
I don't think he was going to.
But I mean, I personally think that he should be given an opportunity, but then obviously I've got blue and white striped spectacles. So.
And I do hate that phrase, given an opportunity. It's you earn it, and you've got to sort of know that it's not, here's an opportunity.
I think he has earned it, but I think he might actually be too old now.
Hardly.
At 27, I think he might actually be too old.
No.
Never mind. Okay, well, we haven't spoken about VAR for a little while, so let's talk about the utterly pointless thing that it actually is.
Go on.
Have you got a beeper in it?
It's a good job we're recording this, isn't it?
Oh, God. But
VAR.
Go on.
Okay, so the first goal against West Ham.
Yep.
The opening, or what should have been the opening goal, disallowed.
For his left testicle being dangling the wrong way.
Can you say testicle?
Yes.
Oh, that's all right.
Yes.
I just don't agree with it. It spoils the game. We haven't got a clue what's happening.
Uh-huh.
If you watched the cricket the other day, on the final day on the Sunday, the decisions referred to the third umpire. You had your answer in a minute. The whole crowd could see it.
Well, they actually do. You can actually hear it in the ground there as well. So the conversation.
I want to see it on the screen. I want to see what the VAR man is looking at. The goal against Southampton.
Well, Southampton was chalked off. Yeah,
against Southampton. Basically, the referee is saying, let VAR make the decision, they'll be sure, instead of making the decision himself. So what we're going to breed is poorer referees who will just bow to technology every time there is a goal, and you spoil the whole atmosphere of the game. Yeah.
To the point
the goal goes in, everyone goes mad, and then we sit and go, hang on a minute, we better wait for VAR.
But the thing is, there was still that anticipation when we scored against Burnley. I mean, we knew it was going to be a legitimate goal. There was no problem with that. When you're watching the game, you know, was there a question? Do you think Murray was offside? Hang on, it was Murray. Of course he was offside. Do you think so-and-so was offside? With that one, you knew it. But it was still a relief when Burnley kicked off. You think, yes, the goal has been given.
What about the match of the day, pundits? Oh, it shouldn't have been given because he was offside. You're going to miss that, aren't you, on match of the day? You know, because offside. They're going to get the decisions right. There's no argument with that.
Mm-hmm.
Although I believe four in the first six games.
But the thing is, my point here is, when do they use it? Because they're not actually
all the
using
time.
It. Because, in terms of goals, they're looking for reasons not to give a goal, than looking for reasons why to give a goal. I mean, for instance, I don't know if you saw the Gareth Bale's goal this week that got disallowed, which was an absolute worldie.
Yeah.
I saw absolutely nothing wrong with that.
There was an accidental handball in there.
But, I mean,
and that's the point. It's not VAR that's the issue there in that sense. It's the new rule.
They didn't go up. They didn't check the penalty that we should have had in this game.
Well, they probably did. That's the point. You keep saying they don't check. You have no idea what they are and not checking. Well, just because they don't give it doesn't mean to say
it's coming up on the screen saying checking penalty. That's what's meant to be happening.
No, they're not.
That's what happened.
Then we should be able to see it as a fan in the ground, paying a fortune to watch the game.
Yeah.
People at home watching Jeff Stelling will know exactly what's happening.
Mm. Well, Paul Barber's actually come out this week and he's actually said that we want to be more clarity in the stadiums. And he said the people, the paying public, aren't getting what they think.
The only time it will come up with a message saying checking for penalty or checking for red card or whatever it might be is if there's a pause in the game. So they're playing the game and they're playing the game and there's the incident and it's not given and you play on. VAR is looking at that still. Yeah. It's still looking at that. But the only reason there would be a pause is, right, the ball goes out of play. Hang on a minute, lads. I've just got to check this. That's when you know that then the message comes out. Apart from that, they are looking at it.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm having watched this several times again. I've been watching it again today. I'm still baffled about how we weren't given a penalty. I mean, Glenn Murray, yes, it's Glenn, but he just pushed him over. He actually pushed it. His hands went up. This in reverb vision, this is really working. But he actually pushed him over.
Yeah.
And it was like, that is just a clear penalty all day long. And I cannot say.
Hang on, all day long, Stonewall. what's the other ones?
Cast iron.
Cast iron.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, nailed. Yeah, okay.
Nailed on. That's how.
I don't know in what universe that isn't a penalty.
Well, it has to be the clear. But your point is you're saying looking for reasons not to give it. What you've got in this instance is it's umpire's call, and it has to be a clear and obvious error. I keep saying clear and obvious, a clear error. And if the referee, let's put it this way, if the referee gives it, you've got a reason. VAR's got to find a reason not to give it, or it's got to find a reason to overturn it. If it's not strong enough, then it won't do it. If the referee doesn't give it, they've got to find a good, strong enough reason. Now, if you're saying, in your opinion, and this is where we get back to VAR being different in football compared to cricket, we're talking about opinion. Cricket is more fact. It's got to be so clear. And to the VO system referee, it's not clear enough. To your mind, it is fine, fair enough. To the next person, it isn't. And you have to know. That's the point about giving a penalty, is it has to be 100% nailed on in order to give it.
Well, this wasn't 100%. This was 455,000,000% of, like, pushing someone, literally putting their hands against someone and pushing them over. I'm incredulous about how...
It doesn't show. Yeah, go on.
Maybe it... Yeah, you can't... AD, you're not on television.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one can see you.
Mind
perhaps
you splinters out
you
your
go
back
the way
when you get off
going
the fence.
Back to the cricket...
Yeah.
Maybe the way forward is each team gets two appeals a half.
I that's another thing. I've heard
for
that
only
before.
For penalties or gold.
Yeah,
like, gold disallowed goals.
Well, that's the way it works in tennis as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
Well, again, that's to do with fact as well, and again, it's something that where you're considering it by the visual. It's the game's too quick to see whether that ball landed on the line or not.
Yeah.
In football, you're still talking about an opinion. And it's very clear in the law, in the opinion of the referee.
I think the referee has got to be making the decisions.
Correct.
Okay, the referee makes the decision. The Burnley or Newcastle, whatever, defender says, nah, that was a push on me. We want to appeal that. It goes to VAR.
But that's my point, is VAR is already looking at it.
And it's umpire's call.
Rubbish.
Or referee's call.
What do you mean rubbish?
No,
VAR,
the whole thing's rubbish.
No, the VAR... No, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I mean, the application of it isn't right. But you're saying that VAR isn't looking at that incident. I'm saying they are.
Of course they're
that's
looking
exactly
at it.
That's exactly what
they're
looking at.
They are looking at it. Of course they are. But, I mean, they're not interfering. Basically, in other countries, the VAR officials are saying to the referee, saying, no, that is a penalty. And they're giving the decision that basically it's not happening over here. Basically, well, there's too much. If they're going to use it properly.
But hang on, you've just said, is the referee king or not? And if the referee is king, it's got to be something big, a major doozy. Now, you're pointing out it's happened four times in the first 6 round of games. OK, that's fine. But the referee cannot be undermined.
No.
Even by his assistant. It's nominally, it's an assistant. The referee is still king. For me, it's actually a video additional referee rather than a video assistant referee.
The referees are usually something king.
But it's the decision is made. Like, for instance, in the instance that AD is talking about, there's a push, an alleged push on Glenn Murray. The referee does. Okay, but never mind that. The referee doesn't give it. Okay, fine. Either doesn't see it, doesn't think there's anything in it. Linesman doesn't see it, doesn't think there's anything in it. Okay, fine. VAR is now going to look at it and is looking at it while the game is going on. Okay. And they don't see, in their opinion, enough to overrule it. But as for the whole thing of having an appeal, that sounds like it's then refereeing by consent, and it's not. It's referee. It always should be refereeing by arbitration.
Well, I'm prepared to argue with you. I just believe that we're seeing goals disallowed for goals just being disallowed that would have been allowed last season.
Yeah.
The Manchester City games, a couple of them, spoilt by VAR. Mm. You know, great goals.
Let's put it
we all want to see great goals. And, you know, I mean,
everyone's biggest beef is, frankly, the time it takes. Like, for instance, goal line technology. It kept us up in the Premier League previously, but it was instant and brilliant. And if it works, and you know it's there to work,
black and white,
great, absolutely. So you're dealing in facts, and that's where VAR, and it is effectively a VAR, in the cricket sense, actually works, because it's an immediate sort of, you know, hawkeye.
If we get a decision within a minute.
Correct, in a second.
If we were given that penalty, then Glenn Murray would have stepped up, and he may have got his first Premier League goal of the season, but obviously didn't get an opportunity But, I mean, Glenn, yet to get off the mark in the league this season, though, he had a few opportunities in this game. It just wasn't his day, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was just one of those games, but his opportunities have got to be taken.
He did convert that try beautifully, though. That one that ended up in the, I don't know, is it still trundling down the railway line? Is there ever going to be a time when anyone's shot is going to be so bad it clears the roof?
Well,
I know it's a big old roof, but
that would be fine, apart from that was Davy Proper. But, you know, it was...
No, that was Murray. The one that got played square to him and he skied it over into the corner. It was Murray.
I can't remember that one.
It was probably the worst shot of the season.
You're not going to see a ball going out of the ground in the Premier League anymore.
Not in this one.
Like the good old days.
Apart from Bournemouth Ground.
Gay Meadow.
Well, yes.
A coracle. A coracle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we did play okay. The second half, we actually started off like a train. We were really hungry for it.
And Burnley looked awful.
And we had a couple of opportunities, but finally one was taken. And it was a great finish by Morpai, which was finished with...
His plums.
Yes, that's what it was.
Go on. I mean, the build-up was good. It was interesting. I mean, this whole thing of, Sonny March just in and just delaying. But what it was is it was waiting for someone actually just to make some space.
Well, it was actually the actual move was started by Matty Ryan.
Yeah.
And he threw it out to Webster, who marauded forwards.
I think marauded, was it? Not forayed or rushed.
It was a swashbuckling run is what it was.
And we've got some swashbuckling centre backs, haven't we?
Yes, we do. Yeah. I mean, all they're missing is this sort of mane. This sort of
it's okay. Chilotto's back soon.
Oh, yes, that will be.
He has something to prove.
Yeah,
frankly.
But
anyway.
But yeah, so he marauded forwards and he played it into Davy Proper in the area, who just ran out of space, and he found Solly March, who wriggled a little bit. Eventually, got a cross in, and
I would say that the Burnley marking was shocking. Yeah. Thankfully, I mean, but I would also say that Mopai did find the space quite nicely, and Solly March found him, and he guided it in wonderfully. You know, obviously it went in, it was fine, but it was deliberate sort of placement. So yeah, a really good goal.
Yeah, and we mentioned...
But not, sadly, the best goal of the game. But no. I do think Burnley's was better.
It was. It was a great finish. Yeah. But, I mean, there was other opportunities. Proper headed over. Yeah. Chris Wood actually missed a sitter, which was...
Yes.
And then
which is not unusual.
Connolly came on, should have scored. Everyone was desperate for him to score, weren't they? Absolutely desperate for him to score.
Well, it was desperate for anyone to score, frankly.
And then there was Hendrick's sucker punch in the 90 minutes.
Why was anyone criticising... Okay, Levo, please answer me this. Why was anyone criticising Matty Ryan for that goal?
I don't know.
No.
I think it was a good strike. It was right in the corner. Yeah. Yeah, maybe he could have got to it.
Is it me or is Matty Ryan becoming a little bit of the fall guy this season?
Well, he seems to be. I mean, I've read somewhere Walton's a better goalkeeper. Right. I'm not sure. I think Matty Ryan's one of the best we've ever had.
Absolutely.
If Walton was a better goalkeeper, he'd be here.
Well, quite.
Yeah, exactly. He wouldn't be perennial.
I think it's one of those things that someone's decided someone isn't playing well, usually based on their own prejudices. And on the back of that, their replacement or their ready-made stand-in is therefore a better player. Their stock rises because someone else has fallen.
I haven't got a problem with Matty Ryan. No, I think he's a terrific goalkeeper.
I know you do, because you think he's a midget.
No, I don't.
Indeed, you've always moaned. Every time you've ever talked about
him. If I think he could have done better, I'll say I think he could have done better. But I think he was blinded on that one.
If he'd done better, he would have turned it round the post.
Oh, yeah.
It was a good shot.
It was, actually, yeah.
And it was a good move that brought the goal, and you can't knock that.
As an interesting aside, all of the goals we've conceded this year have all been from open play. We haven't actually conceded anything from a set piece this season.
Won't be long. That's making me feel a lot better.
Although we haven't scored from a set piece either this season, so all of our goals have been from open play.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Well, we've four goals we've scored this season?
No, five, I think. So three at Watford, so one own goal. Andoni and Morpai, which were both breakaway goals.
Yeah.
Then
the only other one was
Trossard against West Ham.
Oh yes, of course.
Then you've got.
I was thinking that was 0-0 for some reason. Yeah, and then Morpai on. Yeah, and plus the two in the League Cup, which were also from open play.
Open play. So yeah, so I mean, that's
that says something about our free kicks, then, does it?
Well
we did. One of them could have been, but for the fact that his testicle was offside.
This is true. Yeah. Well, actually, Shane Duffy very nearly did get on the end of one, and he got knocked out for his sins.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It takes something to knock him out, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm surprised Nick Pope's wrists weren't broken after that, but never mind. Okay, you are listening to The Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are, as ever, brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and I have a shirt of the week here, which I'm just going to hand over to Levo, and I think this is a doozy.
You always say that.
I love it.
It's another minger.
I like it. I really like it.
Looks like a blue and white jigsaw puzzle with the word Simod above it.
Yeah, and Adrian likes that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's different. I like different shirts. There we go.
So Simod.
Do you remember there was the Simod Cup?
There was the Simod Cup. I'm trying to think where Simod were based.
Sound Finnish or something, isn't it?
I don't know. Somewhere Reading, I think.
Probably. Sorry. Swindon.
Okay. That's not a clue, by the way.
Sorry, could you give us a fuller description of the shirt, Levo?
Well, it's...
Apart from the jigsaw puzzle bit.
Well, it's sort of...
you can't, can you?
I can't, really. It's, there's what looks like a fish at the top. A couple of fish, maybe. a few squares.
Right.
Then it's mainly white with the word Simod on it, and then it's the jigsaw puzzle underneath.
Yeah, any idea who it is?
I'm thinking it's not an English club.
You would be correct.
I'm thinking it's Scandinavian.
It is not Scandinavian.
I'm going to guess it's someone... I do love the Andy Pandy white and blue pinstripes on the sleeves. What did I say? I love. I mean, as in, it's going to make me throw up. it is a minger. I mean, it's
well, Christmas is coming.
It does look like that. It's. I'm going to guess it's someone Greek.
It is not Greek. I am not speaking Greek this week. I am speaking Belarusian. this is your shirt of the week.
What could go wrong here?
This is the 1993 home shirt of a Belarusian Premier League side, Dynamo Minsk. Dynamo Minsk.
Okay.
And this is the shirt they wore when they were winning the inaugural 92-93 Belarusian Premier League title. They are the second most successful side in Belarus, winning the league for the first five successive seasons and then on a further two occasions. Bate Borisov have won the league every other year since 2006. The home ground, then, is the 22,000-capacity Tractor Stadium.
it was stereotypes there, then.
Yeah, and it was originally built in the 1950s for the now-defunct Minsk Tractor Works. The Tractor Works factory team called, funnily enough, FC Tractor Minsk.
Okay.
There we go. During the Soviet era, Dynamo were formed as part of the Dynamo Sports Society in 1927, an organisation that spanned the USSR and promoted sports and fitness to the people. Over 40 sports were participated in. And
I didn't know there were 40 sports.
Yeah, and over 6,000 clubs were formed, including the armed forces, schools, hospitals and factory teams. The name given to the society was supposed to mean power in motion and is taken from the Greek word dynamisis, which means power, and in Latin, motio, which means motion. And there you have it. Dynamo. There you go. you'll want to know about some of the current squad. Now, of course, we do. Yeah, Igor Shitov is a Belarusian international with over 60 caps to his name, and Alexander Krasnestotov is a young midfielder who's played internationally for the under-17s, under-19s, and 19s.
Are we going to be able to get
one
of this level?
Alexander Hleb began his career in the Dynamo Minsk youth team before moving to bigger and better things with the likes of Arsenal and Barcelona. And, of course, the link to the Albion is the legend that was, Sergei Gotsmanov, who, after 289 appearances for Minsk, made 16 appearances for the Seagulls in 1990. He ended his career playing for Minnesota Thunder in the USA, and where he retired in 1999. His son picked up the baton with both Andre and Sasha, played for Minnesota Thunder, later to be known as NSC Minnesota Stars. So there you go.
It's Stelminger.
I love it.
Minsk.
I absolutely love Sergei Gotsmanov.
You mentioned Bate Borisov. I've actually seen them play.
Go on. In what context?
It was a Europa League game against Dynamo Kiev.
Okay.
It was. I'm kind of trying to
think. Ukraine against Belarusian side. Mm-hmm. Now, there's not going to be any tension there, is there?
Absolutely none. The ground was fairly empty.
Yeah.
It was the old Kiev Stadium, not the new one that was built for the, European Championships. And to the best of my knowledge, there wasn't a toilet there. There certainly wasn't a bar. And people, if you wanted to go at half time, it was behind a tree at the back of the stadium.
Hoping that the tree was still there.
Yes. The Borisov fans were extremely noisy and very bouncy.
Excellent. Right. But I've just got visions of one of these sort of huge concrete bowls that, you know, is terracing all the way around that hold of 160,000. Is that kind of thing we're talking about?
No, it was a 40,000-seater stadium, I think.
Seater?
Seater. Yeah, well, there were seats. Yeah, just benches. 40,000 benches.
Yeah,
like the old seats at Wembley,
Yeah.
I was sitting. Well, not many people in Kiev are. There's not a lot of fluent English spoken there.
No.
Champions League are having a laugh, I said, and the bloke next to me says, "You're right, mate."
Okay. But Sergei Gotsmanov, though, I mean, he was actually...
He was quite silky and we couldn't afford him.
He was great. I mean, it was a different time back then, obviously. I mean, obviously, every other player in the squad now is...
it's the majority now.
He doesn't have a UK passport. But back then, I mean, there was... Sergei, I mean, Hans Kray was. He had.
There was a smattering across the divisions, wasn't there? And there was these players were kind of luxurious, you know, these cheap foreign imports as they were known. And and Gotsmanov, it's, you know, I think it was just a blag that Barry Lloyd managed to pull.
I'm convinced he was sponsored by the local larder garage.
I think
he was.
Barry Lloyd, I think, is guilty of bringing foreign footballers into Britain, I think.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
You can hold him responsible.
Yeah. To be fair, Chris Catlin brought in Hans Kray. Mm. You know, one nutter bringing another one in. You know.
But, I mean...
Was it Gotsmanov that he started celebrating his goal before he actually kicked the ball into the net?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I couldn't remember who it was. If our listener is listening to this...
There is a video of that on
who is
YouTube.
It against? He's rounded the keeper and he sticks his hands up in the air, then kicks the ball into the net. Who was it against, please, people?
I think it might have actually been Burnley.
I don't know.
Answers on a postcard.
Please. Or Twitter. That'll do us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Florin Andoni...
Florin Andoni.
He endeared himself to everyone this week. He had... And Andy Naylor, formerly of this parish, he went over to Bruges this week. Yeah. And he was hoping for this historic game of the Albion Loneys playing together against each other in the Champions League. Unfortunately, none of them got on the pitch. So with Percy Tau being the other one, of course. But he did catch up with Florin after the game. And he was less than complimentary.
What did he actually say? Because not all of us have actually got around to subscribing to The Athletic yet.
Well, basically, I mean, cut a long story short, it was he was discriminated against. He wasn't given.
Did he actually use that word?
That's the words he used. Yeah,
discriminated.
Other words, he couldn't work out why Glenn Murray was starting ahead of him every week because he was scoring goals.
And
he doesn't want to come back to the Albion.
Well, I think that was last season. That was Houghton's decision, wasn't it? He wanted Murray on the side, and only got his chance and blew it big time. Mm. You know,
in what way do you believe he blew it?
Blew it with an absolutely stupid tackle.
Are you talking about this season or
this season?
Oh, well, sorry. I thought you meant under Houghton.
No, under Houghton. Yeah, he got his chances. He scored. He scored some nice goals. I don't think he was ever Houghton's first choice. I think Murray was always
goals as
Murray
well.
In possession of the shirt, and it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And you got to work really hard in training, or Murray's got to play really badly to be dropped.
Yes.
I'm talking now last season.
Yeah.
The challenge that cost us the game against Southampton was absolutely ludicrous. It's on the halfway line. Nearly took the guy's knee out.
Yep.
You don't need players doing things like that. And it's not the first time, is it? That's the second time
As we were talking about on the show previously, I think he was a red card in waiting, and it didn't happen when we were away at Spurs at the end of last season. Got subbed on 80 minutes or whatever it was and threw his shirt into the seats as if, you know, he'd done something wrong. Yes, he'd done something wrong, mate. You were trying to maim just about every Spurs player within 10 yards.
Well, I personally, I love Florin. I mean, I think he's got, he does play with
he
a little
does
bit.
Have,
yeah. He plays with the devil on his shoulder a little bit. But,
well, not good enough. That's just the wrong thing to do.
There's plenty of players that have got.
You look at Ashley Barnes, you look at Chris Wood, they know how to crash, bang, wallop without trying to end someone's career.
Look at Ashley Barnes. You look back quite a few years now. Yeah. How many game ban did he get for tripping the referee?
Over the referee.
Superb bit of tripping. I mean, yeah, I think we all...
But he didn't try and take his leg off.
No, he didn't try and take his leg. And that's, unfortunately, that's what
Andoni stupidity.
Did.
Yeah, yeah.
It was stupidity. Knockhart was guilty of the stupidity, but we loved him.
Yes.
And I like Andoni as a footballer, but you can't go down to 10 men in the Premier League.
No.
It is as simple as that.
But I mean, that will be his last Albion action to be red carded.
Well, there is that. And clearly the bloke's a hothead on the pitch and now we see off the pitch.
Can you remember who the last Albion player whose last action was to be sent off?
Well, I would say it was Dean Hammond.
You would be correct.
Although it was admittedly first time round rather than second time round. I think it happened to Andy Rollings as well.
It was indeed, yeah. Against Norwich, yeah.
Yeah. sorry, you put me off there. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Yeah, no, Andoni's a hothead, and clearly now we get to see he's a hothead off the pitch as well. But that doesn't mean to say that, you know, I actually, when Knockhart did against Bournemouth, I thought that was it for him, but he still came back. Mm. So I would like to think the club will have an open-door policy for Andoni. If he chooses not to walk through it, that's his choice. But if the club is prepared to say, hang on, we don't want you to go.
Well, he's on loan. He's out on loan, isn't he? Mm-hmm. So he's got a contract. I don't know how long his contract is. But if we call him back, we call him back.
Yeah, but if you've got someone who's got this attitude of, I should be playing, and if I'm not, I'm, you know, it's absolutely great that they want to be playing. Of course they do. But you're also professional enough to know that, you know, it's the manager's choice. That's the break. If you really want to sort of play week in, week out, be a player manager and pick yourself. That's the only way you're going to guarantee it.
Well, I mean, Glenn said this week, I think he was talking about Aaron Connolly, and he's basically saying that you know, he's got. You know, I'm going to pass on my knowledge. He could learn some stuff from me, and you know,
how to be offside.
One of the things he said was like, you know, if I'm not picked for whatever reason, I don't mull around and sulk about it. I just try and get myself back into the team.
Which is a swipe and only, isn't it?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But yeah. Okay. Well, today we are the tea time kickoff. We're up at Newcastle. Thanks for that.
Every year.
Well, I did actually look to, if he were to get the train back from Newcastle at 8 o'clock after the game. So it kicks off at 5:30. So finishes at 7:30.
I've not been to Newcastle. How far is the station from the ground?
It's in the town centre, the ground, so it can't be too far.
But yeah, I've not been there since May 1979.
Yeah, but they haven't moved, have they?
No.
But if you got a train out of Newcastle at 8 o'clock, what time would you get back into Brighton?
It's probably something ridiculous, like 6:30 in the morning.
11 o'clock the next morning.
Brilliant. Yeah, you're better off hitchhiking, frankly.
Yeah. So that's you know.
Or waiting for teleporters to be invented.
But you know, the fans don't matter.
But the thing is, it's the same the other way around. I get the feeling that the attitude of Sky is that while Brighton and Newcastle are that far apart, therefore, it doesn't actually matter because their fans aren't going to go from up north. And you realise there's a lot of Newcastle fans who will go anywhere anyway, and a lot of them are going to be London based. And anyone who is London based is actually easy access to us. It is slightly different for us because we're not going to have so many that are going to be a Scarborough or Leeds based. You know, somewhere that's actually.
Did we sell out at the away allocation last year at Newcastle?
Probably did in the first season, but yeah. I don't think I think we were just going around visiting all the new ground. All right, Newcastle wasn't a new ground, but
I think that was a late kickoff as well, or an early kickoff. Because I remember that the first year.
I've got the feeling that I would say probably of the last. So this is the fourth season in a row we're playing Newcastle. So of those three seasons plus this, so that's seven games, I'd be astonished if more than two kicked off at their original time.
I don't think
that's something to look back on, you know.
I mean, even the ones at home as well. So, I mean, the one where Orlandi scored that wonderful goal.
Well, that was an FA Cup game that was on the telly. 2 years running.
12 o'clock. That was a lunchtime kickoff.
They either moved it to 12 or 5:30. Whatever it is, they're saying, well, it doesn't matter. They're so far apart, so it doesn't matter if we're
screwed. Doesn't really matter if Brighton fans want to travel. Well, it's tough, you know.
Tough, yeah. We'll watch it on the telly. You know, that's what we're here for.
Which is, you know, I'm as someone who doesn't go to that many away games, I'm happy for it to be on television so I can watch the game.
But you'd like the choice, wouldn't you?
I would like the choice. Exactly. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of fans out there who, how do I get back? They've got to go on a coach, they've got to drive.
Got to stay up there.
Or stay up there.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same for them coming down here anyway. But it's also the nature of public transport. It stops, you know, just when the sun goes down.
Well, that one will
You wrote
be...
a musical about that, didn't you?
I might have done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reverse fixture about the Amex this season, it's our last home game of the season, so that's going to be a Sunday.
Well, at least, but you know what we're going to do, just for the sake of for messing them around, it's going to be a Sunday at midday, isn't it?
Probably.
Or Sunday at 11 o'clock.
But, I mean Newcastle, curious side this year. I mean, they've...
For the taking.
Mike Ashley's actually spent some money, which is unusual for him. And they brought in Joe Ellington, who's looking pretty decent, actually. And Almiron is someone I really, really, really rate. Newcastle fans, they're pretty confident. They think... but is it too early to have a six-pointer this season?
Yeah, far too early, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
No one gets relegated in February. Huddersfield did, didn't they?
But, if we can get up there and get an early goal and shut the crowd up, I think we'll win.
Let's face it, we were rubbish last season. We scored a mossy goal. They're trying to take Glenn Murray's head off. He has no memory of the game. And we still won.
Yeah, it was one of our only three away wins last season. So it's
A lot of fans have been saying that our home record has got to be. It's important, obviously, but we're going to win more games away from home if we play with us in the style we played at Watford. Mm. And let's face it, if you looked at the stats from the Manchester City game, 46% possession.
No one does that, isn't it?
No one does that against Manchester City.
No.
Even Norwich, and they beat them.
Well, quite.
Yeah, I think Norwich had about 30%, didn't they? Something like that.
So but, it'd be nice. And we're back to you again. The point you were saying earlier, Levo, is it's great to have this possession. And we're creating the chances. But dear God, we've got to learn how to finish them.
Well, okay, well, we've got another game as well coming this week as well with Aston Villa coming in the League Cup on Wednesday. Now, we've mentioned the players that have gone out on loan already. it does leave us a little bit light up front. So presumably Conley's going to start. Will we see a midfield of Aaron Moy and Yves Bissouma, maybe?
Don't know. It depends. Who knows? Not a clue, mate.
I hope he takes it seriously, because it's always a competition you can win if Manchester City happen to not want to bother this season.
Well, there is that.
This is true. But
they keep winning that as well.
The last couple of years, haven't they?
Yeah. So, but it's a competition you can win.
Yeah.
Because the top six don't take it particularly seriously until it gets to the latter stages. And I would like to see it taken seriously, like I do all cup competitions.
We said this last year when it came to the FA Cup. We think, oh, great, we're in a mid-table position. We're doing really, really well. Let's give it a go for the FA Cup. When we got to the semi-final, brilliant. Did it sort of put the skids under us for the running of the season? I mean, my attitude is if we're mid-table come December and the FA Cup draw's made, no, let's focus on the Premier League, I think.
You would focus on the Premier League.
Over the FA Cup every time.
I'd have taken an FA Cup win last season in relegation. But then I'm in a minority. I'll accept that.
Yeah. My view is your job as a football club is to try and win everything you possibly can, to try and win things. So if you're in a competition, then try and win it.
We did try and win it, but it's the nature of the resources. That's the point I'm making. It's not as though don't bother with the FA Cup, but you have to prioritise.
It's going to be.
Now, these guys are on 40, 50 grand a week. Yeah. Can they not play two games of football
against
in a week?
Against Premier League sides, probably not. If you can see the speed and the pace and the effort they have to put in. We don't know what effect that has. None of us can do that. When you've got players that can. And especially when you're playing an FA Cup match, and then 3-4 days later, you've got to play Manchester City, in the league. You think there's no way that those and City haven't had a game, at the same time that we've played. Something's going to give, and it's usually our defence.
Well, maybe I'm just old fashioned.
Yeah. Absolutely. But the other thing is that because the amount of money that you get for being in the Premier League compared to just about every other competition queers the pitch completely, so that absolutely everything is geared towards.
I could talk about that for hours, and I won't.
Well, quite. Oh,
yeah, okay. Because it's obscene.
It is obscene.
Well,
absolutely.
It's a game that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the forgotten people.
Well, do you think the likes of you're talking about Alzate has got an opportunity? Is El Galgo ready to come back?
Not quite.
Okay.
They were talking about him playing in the 23s on Friday night, but.
Along with other prospect Andrew Crofts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, good old Crofty. But that's we're coming to the end here, Levo. Have you got anything to plug?
Well, it's the Treason Show.
Go on.
Up here, Saturday night, 9 o'clock. It's a shame there's not been a lot in the news, so I don't know what they're going to find to.
Have you got any. Obviously, you're a writer for this, so have you got any. Plans to write anything else? Any new plays?
At the moment, I've got an idea, which I don't really want to.
You've got to keep your powder dry.
That one, but it's been a couple of years. Yeah, I work too hard. Maybe I should just retire and just write nonsense.
Yeah, well, it was good. I
talk it, so I might as well write it.
Bring back Mein Kampf van for the Fringe. That'd be good.
Well, maybe, you're talking about sort of. Is there much to write about? I get the feeling that satirists absolutely despise what's going on at the moment because it's satire. The right. Itself.
Well, it is, and it's there is only one topic.
Yeah.
Now, I'm banned from talking about Brexit at home because I'm told it's my latest obsession.
And you're banned from talking about it here as well, Levo. So thank you very much to Simon Levinson there. Thank you to Alan Wears. I've been Aidy Packham. This has been The Album Raw. We'll see you all again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.